Well, hello, everybody. Welcome back to Game Store Profits. It is episode 167, hitting your ears on the 5x5s. And we are just super excited, as you can tell. This is, amazingly enough, your Uncle Jeff. I'm glad to be back on the airwaves with a couple of my favorite companions to go adventuring with. And there's no other person I would rather see roll with advantage than this man. Mike Perna, how you doing?
I feel as if I've somehow made my way into an episode of WKRP in Cincinnati.
Cincinnati!
I'm waiting for turkeys to be thrown off roofs and all sorts of shenanigans.
Well, it is post-Thanksgiving, so there's turkeys
saying.
To be spared.
That's what I'm saying.
That's right. And of course, if I really needed to have a clutch perception check rolled, I'd go to my friend and yours, Mr. Daniel Fisher.
Well, hello, Jeff. I'm very glad to have you back on the mic today.
Yeah, it's, you know, it feels like a gentle, mellow episode. You know, not looking for too much excitement. Want to keep it nice and calm, relax. But then again, our listeners might fall asleep. Can't have that happen.
No, we can't have that happening at all.
So before I cast the Shroud of Benadryl on everybody, Mike, how are you doing, man? What's going on?
I have been pretty much living a life that's leading up to baby.
Baby!
That's baby. It's pretty much my existence at this point. So, as you may have heard, those of you who are out there listening to this right now, this is my penultimate pre-baby podcast. I got one more in me. We're going to do our end of the year awards. But after that, I'm going to take some time off. You will not be hearing from me for a while because at sometime in the not too distant future, I will be, getting a tiny baby into my home. So, I will be spending time with the tiny baby as opposed to the large ones that are on this podcast with me.
How dare you?
Now, our wonderful listeners, as you realize, Mike has just said that he's going to get in one more podcast before the baby gets here. Now, here's the issue. Mike just cursed himself. That baby's going to be here tonight. You laugh.
Let it be known. I will drive down to Tennessee and I will hurt you.
Hey, I didn't do it. You're the one that said it, man.
One laying it out there.
All right. Enough about the baby shenanigans. Yes, you will be in very capable hands despite the fact that I will not be here. These guys will be joined by TR Knight and you will have amazing good times. However, I know for me, I already had the last episode was a solo mic episode where I talked about PAX Unplugged, but I didn't have you guys to bounce anything off of at that point. I'm going to tell you that PAX Unplugged was flipping fantastic.
That's cool.
You got to see all our good friends at Game Church.
I got to see the Game Church crew, the Dice Tower crew. There were so many things that I wish I could have seen because I was only there for the one day. But as it stands, Sean and I the entire time were just like, yep, and this is what we're doing next year, and this is what we're doing next year.
Nice.
Because yeah, it's easy for us to get there. So Inroads will definitely be there in effect next year, and I'm very excited about the process.
Well, I can tell you had fun taking pictures, because I think when I looked at the Facebook post, like the Prime one, there was like how many, like 900 some odd pictures that you uploaded or something.
No, that's just Facebook being Facebook, and it takes all my Instagram pictures there, but I did take a metric ton of all sorts of pictures over at PAX Unplugged because I was trying to cram 3 days worth of convention into one day, so right. that comes with a cost. Yeah, we'll call it a cost,
a mental toll.
Yes.
Yeah.
So Daniel, you also have had shenanigans and events.
Yes,
and things.
So we had our wonderful game day at the Game Science store in Bardstown, Kentucky. It was very It was very interesting. It was a good 4-hour drive up and back. And as a few of y'all know, the general manager, soon to be owner of Game Science, is one of the Tavernites. James, he's a pretty cool dude. And so, I decided that we needed a game day up there, and and I was talking to him about it. So we scheduled one out, and so me and Matt Larkin, we jumped in my wife's little car because it gets better gas than mine, and shot up there with all the games we can, you know, hold in it, and had a great day. We got there. Kids came to the door looking at us like, we know these guys. These guys bring games. And, like, as soon as we got out of the car, they pushed the door open, run to our car, get our bags, and take them in, put them on the table, and waited patiently for us to start unpacking.
That's nice. You already have porters waiting for us to come out and get your bags.
It's amazing. They roll in style up there at that shop. But, we got to, you know, we got there, and a few kids were there, and as soon as we started getting games out, they're like, let's play this. Can you teach us how to play this? Let's play this. And they were everywhere, but yet they would still sit down and play. So more kids start coming in. Like, they're like, you know, kids off the street. And they're like, and they knew them from school. So they started talking, and we started playing with them. And then some adults came in, and they started playing. And some of the adults were like, we didn't even know this place existed. And I'm like, how did you find out about your game day?
Nice.
It's like, okay. So it's pretty good. It's good. It's good. We stayed till about 5 and drove home and got home about 10. So it's a great day.
That's a solid day. That's nice.
Yeah.
So what do you think was your favorite part? Was there ever a moment during your event that it's like, this is awesome?
It was just the fact that there were so many kids just excited about gaming. I know that store just had started selling Warhammer stuff. So there was a few guys there playing Warhammer, and we got a chance to talk about models and miniatures and things like that. And the fact that as soon as those guys showed up, the little kids that, you know, are James's family, they're like, they call their mom, can you bring our Warhammer miniatures up here? These are like 7-year-old kids, 7 and 8 year olds. They're like, we're going to play 40K. I'm like, okay. So, and then, you know, Matt got to learn how to play 40K as well. They taught him how to play 40K, and he was excited about that. So it's pretty fun. I did have a bad experience at one point, but it was okay after that.
Balances out.
It was a kid that cheats at everything. Yeah.
That's always hard because the same you both want to, you know, you don't want to kick a kid out, but at the same point you're like, yeah, dude, you're kind of ruining everybody's time.
Yeah.
Well, he was trying to cheat for everybody. Like, no, we were playing this crane game.
Oh, is it? I can't remember the name of it, but it's the one where you, like, hook like a headband up.
And he's like, if you try it 2 times, you can pick it up with your hand. And I was like, no, you can't.
Second.
You can't pick it up with your hand, kid.
That's not how, like, it works at all.
The whole purpose of this game is to not use your hands.
I know. And then they're like, you just take the crane off your forehead and use that like a fishing pole. It's like, no, you can't.
Oh my goodness.
So, but we had fun with that.
Well, when we're not talking about these things, like I said, this is the we're kind of getting a jump on the end of the year stuff. Normally we kind of wait till it's literally the end of the year, but because this is my penultimate podcast, we decided we were going to up our calendar a little bit, and we were going to make it so that I could be a participant in this year's end of year festivities. So the next podcast that you'll hear from us will be our end of the year awards and all the crazy shenanigans that are involved with that. There's probably going to be some overlap here with some of the stuff, because we are going, as is our want, as is what we usually end up doing at some point or another, is so next podcast we'll be focusing on the stuff that's happened this year that has gotten us particularly excited. But leading up to that, we want to just do our top five of the collection. So basically each one of us has looked at our collection of games, the stuff that we have on our shelves, and in true to form, I have gone all board games, Romo has gone all role-playing games, and Daniel's somewhere in the middle.
I do have a miniatures game in there as well.
Oh, ho, we're getting really fancy now.
Middle, man. He's like bringing in the whole house.
So the way it's going to work is that we are literally just going to talk about our favorite stuff that we own. This is our stuff that, for one reason or another, whether it's the stuff that we always get to the table, or the stuff that we just love, or the stuff that gets us excited, we are just going to take a minute to just gush. We are just going to just spend some time talking to you guys about what we love, the stuff that we really enjoy. I know for me personally, I know for a fact that if you listen to the previous year, I definitely have some changes in mind. Partly that's because I've picked up a couple things, but not entirely because of that. Some things have shifted around and gotten tweaked, and I'm excited about all of these.
Well, I'm glad you are.
I'm glad you are too.
So Romo, let's get us started. Well, here, you know what? Even before we get started, does anybody have anything that just kind of didn't quite make the list, but something you especially want to mention? Something that's getting you excited, but didn't quite make a quote unquote top five list?
Yes.
No, go ahead, Daniel. Okay. I got a couple.
It's a game that my family enjoys playing. It's called Mole Rats in Space.
Yes.
It's a very fun game. It's great. My daughter was very upset with me because Sunday before last at church, I was talking to the preteen classes about ministry. And, you know, me and Ben does a lot of stuff with Game Church with me. And we were telling them pretty much that, hey, anything can be a ministry as long as you do it for God in the right mind. And, you know, I asked some of the kids, like, what are the things you like to do? And one kid's like, I like to play basketball. So the kid's like, I like to play soccer. I said, those are ministries right there in their own. I said, you could take that and you could, as an adult, lead and teach kids how to play basketball and, you know, lead them to, you know, Christ that way. Or, you know, you can go out and reach kids that just need an adult in their life or a friend. And so, you know, we built on that. But yeah, I brought in some games, and Mole Rats in Space was one of them. And the preteen teacher was like, can I borrow that? I was like, sure. So my daughter got mad.
It's good to have a positive impact.
Oh, yeah.
I think for me, there was a lot of bundles of holding this year that really struck my fancy. And I spend a lot of time, like, coalescing all of the hardbound books into digital format because I've been, you know, just trying to travel light and been trying to pare down the kind of level of stuff that's in our home. So what I've done is I found a couple that I just kept buying, I kept buying it because it was just sweet, super sweet deals. You know, you go to Bundle of Holding and you spend like $20 and you get, you know, 6, 7, 8, 10 books, right?
Yeah.
So the one that I was like really keen to get to the table and I haven't been able to, and I don't know a lot about the rules other than the setting, is called Colonial Gothic. It is a horror book, and I see you dancing around, Daniel. I see you.
I almost bought that.
I did buy it, and I haven't been able to get it to the table yet, which I'm kind of bummed about. It'd be kind of cool to do it here, so we'll see.
I would actually play on Roll20 if you ran that.
I will have to like come up with like macro rollers because it's not a widely used system, so I haven't seen it on there yet. But in any case, it's basically the center of the system is a 2D12 system. So I think there's a couple of those types of games out there. But the setting is what really grabbed me. At the time that the Bundle of Holding was released, my wife and I were in the middle of rewatching the John Adams miniseries, the one that HBO put out. And so I was like, oh man, that's perfect. I'm totally into a Revolutionary War vibe. And that's where this game is centered, is in the Revolutionary War. It's got a mixture of kind of like subtle, almost Cthulhu-esque type magic and horror that's kind of mixed in there. So all of the the Salem witch trials and all that stuff has led to actual, you know, there's actual magic, some forms of magic in the world. But it's definitely horror-based, Revolutionary War-based. So all that level of technology and everything, but it's really got a great setting established. All of the accompanying books that I got with it are just so rich. I've read through a few of them just because of the setting base, and oh my gosh, it is so richly detailed. So, yeah, it did make the five. I talked about it enough to have made the five, but Colonial Gothic, it's my runner-up.
Well, I will say that I'm going to jump in with, I mean, in a way, I'm guessing that pretty much all of ours could potentially fall under the auspices of the archive dive, which is our, our one and only actual segment on the show. For those of you who don't know, the Archive Dive is when I look at a game that is at least a year old, as in something that is over 1 year, because generally we want to try and bring attention to some games, especially because of the fact that a lot of our audience is new to gaming. They're just discovering it, or they've been in it, but they've only recently been in it. So stuff that those of us who have been in the hobby for a long time, we just assume people know about. There's all this other stuff out there that people unless somebody brings it up to them, they've never heard about it. So I'm going to go with one that it was kind of early on in my gaming. It was probably the first like big board, lots of stuff, lots of chits kind of gaming experience that I ever got. And that's Small World.
That's a good game.
And
it's a good pick.
Small World didn't make the top five. It wouldn't even make the top 10, but dang it. If I'm not going to tell you that Small World is something that I would highly recommend on your shelf. Small World is basically real simple, because you're accumulating these armies, and all it works is to get an army onto the field. It's basically just two of your guys takes a blank space. If there's something on that space already, you basically use two guys plus however many things are on that space. And so it makes the mechanisms very simple, but there's a lot of opportunity for crazy stuff to happen, because you're not just like, these are my guys and those are your guys. You're dealing with whole civilizations, and it's civilizations of a race and kind of a descriptor. And after a while, you realize you're about ready to run out of guys, and so you end up putting the one civilization into decline, and you kind of pick up a new one. And so you have both the ones that are already on the board, plus you're getting this whole new other group of people with all of their abilities coming in from another portion of the map, and it's area control. It really is an amazingly fun game just because of that variety and that silliness. And I love talking about things like, we're going to have like the flying giants and that sort of stuff. I always love the peaceful orcs is always an entertaining one.
So like with a game like Small World, it's one of those pieces that you could go a year or more without playing, but you know that it's worth it to keep around because of the low entry level, and it's worth keeping around because, well, it's fun.
Right. Right. Like I said, it's not going to be like the top spots on my list. And in fact, I've recently started watching all the Dice Tower top 100 lists, because apparently like once every year or so, they all head to YouTube and do their top 100 lists. I think it showed up on a couple of them, but it was like super high up on the list. Which, granted, the first thing that they always caveat with is, it's 100 games out of all the games that exist. So even number 100 is a big deal.
Right.
But you still, I mean, even with those guys who literally have dozens and dozens and dozens of these things coming across their desk on the regular, even they'll still be like, no, Small World is worth your time. No, it really is. It's a solid game, and it's one of those things, like Jeff said, even if I'm not playing it all the time, I don't want to ever get rid of it, because the second somebody's like, I really want to play Small World, it doesn't take a lot of arm twisting to get me to want to play Small World too.
Right.
It's one of those, like, just it's almost, it's a staple. It's something that you need to have around.
Now, if you were going to have a game day, would you consistently bring Small World with you?
I often bring Small World with me.
There you go.
Bring it with me. That's saying something too, because it does have a lot of moving parts. It does have a lot of bits and pieces. Mm-hmm. So a lot of times I will kind of hesitate to bring games that have a lot of bits and pieces, because that's a lot of wrangling, especially because, you know, I'm running events with all these people at it, and I'm like, it's a lot of bit wrangling with a lot of people. I'm not sure it's worth it. But Small World is worth it. So, yeah.
Cool.
No, I definitely recommend it.
That's awesome.
So that has the dual purpose of my honorable mention and and the Archive Dive right there for you. So we're trying to be efficient here, because we will probably spend the rest of this episode gushing about this awesomeness. So
we have like a little like bong bong bong, like when it's the archive dive, you know, we have like a little announcement bell or something.
Oh, there we go. We should have. I do have a copy of Commissioned that I have yet to give away. We could do come up with the jingle for the archive dive.
Oh, that's pretty slick. That's a great idea. There you go. I like it. Like it. All right. Yeah,
we'll see. I'll totally do. I mean, I do have a copy of Commissioned from the stack that they gave us, so that could happen. If you're listening and you have, you know, any kind of skill with musical fun times, feel free to let me, you know, drop us a line. Yeah. I would be happy to do that. But so we'll see. If I get a couple of them, we'll do a legit contest with that. But I do think it would be fun to have like a listener created jingle for the archive dive.
Yeah, that'd be pretty cool. I like it.
We started off with Romo doing the honorable mention. So Daniel, do we want to start in reverse order, go from five down up to one, or do we want to?
Yeah, that's probably best.
All right, so hit us with your number five.
My number five, and this is going to surprise a lot of people, is 5th edition Dungeons and Dragons.
Doesn't surprise me.
I've been playing a lot because, you know, I'm running two games right now and I'm flipping between Deadlands and 5e.
Mm-hmm.
And it's just, that's what we do, you know. And we've been playing, you know, we haven't got to play as much Deadlands because half those people don't show up as much. But when they do show up for D&D, it's been pretty good. And I'm really enjoying it. It's really streamlined. And I've heard a lot of older folks say that it's really like first edition, or no, it was third edition. They said it's like third edition was streamlined, and I was like, no, it's more fun. It's more fun. Yeah, it's more fun.
I don't see it.
But yeah, I've been playing it. I actually played it with the kids last weekend, and it was awesome. Nice. So I posted.
That's it. You know, I totally agree, man. I didn't put it in my top five specifically because I figured you'd probably include it in there. But I definitely, it's been my go-to for the last few, gosh, since I've been going through this whole rigmarole since July. It's been basically my go-to game just simply because it's easy to pick up, and any random group of people who are going to do a pickup game probably know 5e.
Oh yeah.
So yeah.
Oh, and I mean, I'll chime in too. I'm literally tomorrow. No, not tomorrow. I keep thinking today's Friday. On Saturday, I will be hanging with my buddies, and we'll be wrapping up the current campaign that we have running of D&D 5th edition, which I believe we've been doing this particular run for 2 years now.
Nice.
And we'll be wrapping up this. So I'm very excited about that. We've had to do a lot of adult with responsibility gaming, aka like we're coming up with new and fun ways to explain why someone character suddenly isn't there.
Yeah.
So I've had to miss a couple of them, but I'm excited that I can get out for the kind of last hurrah of this particular band of crazies as I get my dwarf warrior doing all sorts of crazy shenanigans. Hey kids, Future Mike here with a bit of an interruption just to make some corrections and to talk about the fact that I did in fact play. One of my guys actually did the math, and it wasn't 2 years that we'd been playing this campaign, it was 3. Granted, we did stretch this, like I said, we only got to play once a month, and sometimes we had to stretch it to once every other month, so it's not like we were playing every week or anything, but I've been literally playing this character for 3 years. And I'm thankful to say that we did, in fact, send Tiamat screaming back to the Nine Hills. And dang it, it was satisfying. My guy literally left that game with 3 hit points left, no potions, no nothing. He was barely hanging on, but we won. God, that's why role-playing is so awesome after that moment. It was fantastic. I just had to come and share that with you because I'm still just tingling with how awesome that was. Anyway, get back to the rest of these guys. Enjoy the rest of the show. Future Mike, out.
That's cool. That's cool. Yeah. D&D 5e, man. It's here to stay, I would imagine, just with all the number of books that have been coming out. And they haven't been, it's not an inundation of books. You know, they're not overwhelming the market, but at the very least, they're putting in some good quality stuff. So
they know what they're doing.
I'm happy. Yeah, I'm really happy. And, you know, it's just this whole RPG renaissance over the last like two, 2.5 years has been just continually going up. So
speaking of, Jeff, what's your number five?
Who, me? Well, I think I mentioned it last year. It's a game that I really enjoy playing because it's kind of got a combination of old school, new school. I do enjoy Star Wars FFG. I love the narrative dice. But if I was going to play a sci-fi futuristic game, it would be Stars Without Number. It's free for nothing. You can get it at DriveThruRPG. You can get a free version of it that doesn't include artificial intelligence information in there, which you don't necessarily always need. You can always make it up on the fly. But it is a lot of fun. It keeps it simple. There's only three primary classes. There's a psychic, a fighter, and basically like an engineer type, science-y type guy, knowledge type. All your skills are based around 6 attributes, pretty standard, like any other old school game. But you roll your skills using 2d6 plus whatever the skill level is that you've acquired. Successes are pretty easy to determine. It's, that it's based on a difficulty scale that ranges from no check because it's super simple all the way up to 13, which is like how do they describe it? Sprinting up a greased incline tightrope on your hands. So that's a difficulty 13 skill check. And then combat kind of like has a little bit of that flavor of the old school where you're rolling a d20 based on adding in the target's armor class, the attacker's combat skill, the attribute modifier, and your attack bonus. So the cool thing is the armor class is that lowering scale. So the lower your armor class, the better you are at defending against attacks. But it's got a real nice setting. You know, it's far-flung future. You're using technology that was stolen away from the human race, and you're kind of reclaiming it, called spike drives, where you're kind of shifting between different planes of existence to go faster than light. But it's wide open. If you're looking for a sandbox and you're looking for a place to kind of stake your claim on any corner of the galaxy, that's the way to go. I have a lot of fun with it, and it is one of the three systems that I'm looking to set up for 2018. I'm kind of thinking of 2018 as a long form year where I'm looking to maybe do a couple of long form campaigns to kind of get things going. So Stars Without Number. Spacey.
All right, my number five, I'm going to bring us into the board gaming world. More specifically, I'm going to be bringing us into the card gaming world with this one. Folks know that I have often been drawn in by the lore of living card games and the living card game model. Because of the various trademarks, this is technically not a quote-unquote living card game, but it pretty much is for all intents and purposes. From the good people at Plaid Hat Games, Ashes, Rise of the Phoenix Born is my number five. I adore this game. I think it's great. In case you don't know, it's a two-player card game. It's a head-to-head card game. You can play it with four people. I recently had somebody ask me if they got the box set, could they play with four? And yes, though I recommend rather than doing the four-person free-for-all, I would definitely recommend doing a team. There was two teams, but you play as the Phoenix Born, which are people who have basically been given the essence of this god, the Phoenix. And just like Highlander, you are all trying to do battle to try and be the last Phoenix Born left to basically take in all the power of the Phoenix. I'm fascinated by the world that this game takes place in. I like the mechanics because unlike some games where you have things like mana in Magic and all these other things, that the way you get energy to kind of bring your cards out, in this game, I like it because of the fact that the way you get energy is by dice. And so you're rolling dice at the beginning of every round, and that those dice dictate what you can do. It goes both ways because in one way, you can do crazy things like on turn one.
Right.
And at the same point, there could be that moment where you have to kind of, you can't just rest on your laurels because you can get a crappy die roll and suddenly you're just kind of, you know, knocked back on your heels going, all right, how am I going to handle this nonsense? I only got basic energy with my dice. So I love that mechanic. I love the idea of the exhaustion and how you have to be able to plan ahead so you can't just rush in and just slaughter somebody, because the second you do that, you're completely leaving yourself open for a return attack from the other person.
I tried to do that and you killed me.
I did. I did. That's exactly right. So it does cause you to be more strategic with your attacks. And it's not just, I'm attacking with everything, because it more often than not, it won't work that way. I like the fact that you can actually, if you want your creatures to stay alive, you can actually, as your Phoenixborn, jump out and take the hit instead. Yeah. Like, there's a lot of stuff going on in this card game that I love. And these characters, man, they're only getting better. Yeah. They're cranking out some really just amazing cards and really cool things. I haven't been able to get into deck building yet with it because of the fact that I'm the only one around here that owns it. So I kind of try.
And that's not necessarily a horrible thing, because in and of itself, the core game has enough permutations that it keeps you entertained.
Oh yeah, no, the core, cool. the core box comes with a bunch of decks. So even if you never do any kind of custom deck building yourself, I mean, there's so much in the box, even if you never touch that stuff.
Right.
I just know for me, I want to touch that. I just haven't been able to. It's such, it's such a good game.
Yeah.
And they're continuing to put out really cool decks that kind of feed into it and kind of play off each other. They just released their first two, what they call deluxe expansions, which bring in different dice types. So yeah, there's a lot going in on that game.
I like it. It's the one card game other than the One Ring that I've really gotten into. That yeah, I thought it was fun. A lot of fun.
All right, Daniel, we're back to you. What's your number four?
Okay, I was actually talking about this a little bit earlier. East Texas University setting for Savage Worlds. Something about it. It's a modern setting. It's a horror setting. And it's just...
It's a Buffy setting.
Yes, it's Buffy. If you like Buffy the Vampire Slayer, it's that setting. Or if you like Supernatural, it's the same setting.
Qualifies.
Yeah, so it's a very good setting. And I've always enjoyed the stuff from Pinnacle Entertainment Group. And they just released Flash Gordon on a Kickstarter.
Oh, I saw that. Yes, I saw you post that, and I was like going bananas. I was like, yeah, what?
I remember when they announced it at Gen Con, two Gen Cons ago. I was in the Savage Worlds little conference room area that we were dealing some Savage Worlds stuff with. And they posted it. And I'm like, what? Tomorrow? What? And so, it may have been three Gen Cons ago. It's the Gen Con I got to meet Mike for the first time.
That long ago?
Yeah, I think so. I have to go back and look. But
it's been around for a little while.
Yeah. So East Texas University is you're in college and you're trying to keep your grades up, like normal everyday grades. And then all of a sudden, weird stuff starts happening. Like you might run into a ghost in a dormitory and you've got to deal with it. Or you might run into werewolves on the football field. Or you might run into cultists down near the pond trying to sacrifice one of the cheerleaders to the lake monster.
Because there's a lake monster.
Yes, there's a lake monster. And it's set in Pine Box, Texas.
Pine Box, Texas. Yes,
at home of the Fighting Ravens.
Love it. I love it. I love that kind of stuff, man.
So, Jeff.
I love that kind of stuff.
Jeff, what's your number four?
What's your problem? What do you want? What do you want from me?
Yeah.
Number four? Yes, is that what it is?
Your number four.
So for my number four, I'm going to go with something that you guys might have seen on our much languishing YouTube channel. There's a few games out there, but there's one that I really actually didn't think I was going to enjoy at all. And the main reason that I went with it is because we had one of our regulars, Brent Brown, was running the game, and it's Cthulhu Confidential. It's Cthulhu. It's based in the Gumshoe system where... You know, just in a very brief nutshell, the Gumshoe system is all about saying, okay, you're going to do some investigations, but if something happens and you can't, you know, get the dice to do what you want. You don't want to get stuck in a brick wall and not be able to move the story forward. So the gumshoe system kind of like works its way around any dice failings and actually helps you to continue. It's more focused on like that narrative aspect, right? Is you want to keep the story propelled forward. So Robin D. Laws, Chris Bivey, and Ruth Tillman put together this system, Cthulhu Confidential, as a one-on-one system or a one-to-one system. So this is where you have one keeper and one player, and you guys are basically telling the story together. And so they've taken the gumshoe system and they've kind of parsed it down even further, where you have action cards that result if you fail something, you get this setback card. If you succeed at something, you might get a positive card. And then you use those later on to kind of help influence the story. Within the book itself, if you get a chance to get the book itself, it actually has some built-in stories and built-in characters that you can lead off with. But it also shows you how to make characters of your own.
Yeah.
But I didn't think I would enjoy doing a one-on-one story. You know, where it's just, there's just me and the keeper, or if I was running the game and then one player. I've tried it before, didn't have a lot of fun, and owing to the fact that it might have been because it was 3.5, so there's a lot of rules to deal with, probably not the most conducive to a one-on-one game. But this one really, it scratched an itch, and I was not aware that I was going to enjoy it as much as I did. Hats off to Brent for putting together a fantastic game, too, and a crop of NPCs that are pretty unforgettable. But Cthulhu Confidential, I had a lot more fun than I thought I would, and in fact I am I'm looking to like set up kind of a one-on-one game with another fellow from the tavern, TR Knight, you guys know him, where we're just kind of doing just one-off. We both have created characters and we're going to actually use D&D 5e to do like a one-on-one game and just kind of have it as a, and ever so often we get together and we create and do stuff. So if I hadn't have played Cthulhu Confidential, I don't think I would have been as open to it as I am now. So check it out. It's good stuff.
Number 4.
Okay. My number 4 is pretty much as brand new as I can get it. It's literally only a couple weeks old in the collection, but it is already up to number 4. I went into PAX basically saying, all right, there's not a whole lot of new releases, so I'm just going to see what people have. I'm going to see what's available and what's out there, and I'm going to try and demo when I can. But I wasn't even there to really demo games because, again, I was trying to cram an entire convention into one day, so I was mostly just talking to people. But there was one game that was there, and I knew I had to try it because the promise that this game gave me was it's a 4X experience. So, all right, I always forget one, but I'm going to do it. 4X games are explore, expand, exploit, nice, and exterminate. Ha ha! I actually got all four of them. So it promised a 4X experience in about an hour of gameplay.
Hmm.
And I'm like, that is super hard to do. So I went over to the demo tables and I got a seat and actually played the bulk of an entire game. And that tells you something. Like, I played pretty much an entire game at a demo table at a convention. It really is kind of fantastic. You basically have your little empire and everybody – it's asymmetric setup, so – you all have special abilities, but you also have different stuff at the beginning of the game. So you're setting up like some of the races, like the Bionics have like four different technologies in the in construction area, whereas some people have a lot more things that are operational already. There's all sorts of different stuff depending on who you're playing as. So I'm already digging the fact that it's asymmetrical kind of engine building stuff. You have, you're discovering planets, which those planets can give you either resources that you can use to build other stuff, or it can give you, basically everything has the option to do like a logistics. And if you put it on the logistics side, it usually gives you some kind of bonus, makes things cheaper, makes things stronger, that kind of stuff. You get technologies, which are either going to score you victory points, or they're going to give you serious hardcore bonuses. or you have ships, and ships you can attack alien planets, or you can attack the other players. Attacking the other players, basically, it doesn't help you so much as it hurts them, so it's kind of got a very Imperial Settlers vibe that way, where attacking isn't necessarily going to be for your benefit, but it might slow down somebody who's outpacing you. One thing that I loved about Alien Artifacts, but I could easily see that some people would find really annoying, are the titular alien artifacts. Some of them are real simple, like they'll just give you stuff that you can build into your empire immediately, which is nice, but it's hardly game-breaking. Then there are some, if you go back to the last podcast, you can hear me actually talk to Ignacy about this. There was in the game that I demoed, the one guy had picked up an alien artifact, and he just kind of kept, we're like, is it one that you show us now? And he goes, no, this is going to show up later, and you're going to hate me. And we're like, okay, yeah, sure, whatever. Well, we get to the end of the game, he's dead last, and he goes, by the way, my alien artifact means that after the game's over, I get three more turns.
I don't know about that.
The second that card flipped, I immediately realized some people are going to hate this game, but oh my goodness, do I love it. It's such a cool experience. It's really easy. It's really quick. From knowing absolutely nothing about the game, it took us maybe 1 to 2 complete rounds of playing it before we were getting lightning quick. We all knew what we were doing. We knew what we were going for. It's a really good game, and there's a reason why I came home with it. I went into PAX saying I can't spend a dime, and literally like 5 minutes into the demo, I'm texting my wife, Suze, can I bring home one game? it's awesome. It's a keeper.
Number 3. So, okay, as much as you guys know, I enjoy settings in general.
Apocalypse
World?
Get off my apocalypse.
Stop
it right there.
So, I got this game at Gen Con, and I haven't got a chance to bring it to the table yet because it takes about 4 hours to play it. And my kids don't have the attention span, so I have to have guys not play this game. And it has miniatures, and it's Wasteland Express. It looks so beautiful and awesome. Mm-hmm. And I remember when this game was being touted, when I first started coming onto the podcast, and we talked about it a little bit then. I was like, oh, this game looks great, and I can't believe I actually own it, but I can't play it because I ain't got nobody to play it with.
That makes you a hoarder.
I know.
And it also hurts me because I want it.
And he's keeping it right in the field of view of the camera. Just cheese mic off. Man, that's rough.
No, it's such a good game. It's such a good, literally, it would probably be on my list if I owned it.
But yeah, I'm excited about it. I'm excited about taking and painting the miniatures. I've got to get better at Rust, period.
Well, yeah, basically, to give people at home who've maybe never seen Wasteland Express, it's basically like Mad Max.
Mad Max mixed between the postman.
The postman.
Yeah.
I hear Express and I think trains. I want to hear trains.
So take a great Mel Gibson movie and a terrible Kevin Costner movie.
That movie had Tom Petty in it. Don't you besmirch
it. It did, and that was one of the few good things about it.
If I was going to have a post-apocalyptic civilization or a village or some kind of enclosure, I would want Tom Petty at that.
I would demand Tom Petty.
Heck yes. Are you Tom Petty? You're elected.
All right. So is there anything else that you want to say about Wasteland Express? Otherwise, we're going to move on to Jeff.
Go ahead, Jeff.
Oh, man. So we've gone to the far-flung future. And then we've traveled to the 40s, right? World War II era with Cthulhu Confidential. My number 3 is The Sprawl. I would be ridiculous if I didn't include some game in here that was not, that, or if I didn't include a game that was based on the Apocalypse World engine. So this is my entry into the top 5, and that is The Sprawl. It's a cyberpunk game. I would normally include Shadowrun in this. Just for the sake of the fiction that's in Shadowrun. The fiction in Shadowrun is amazing. The world that's been built around that, amazing. But in my old age, I look for, simpler rules. I've drifted away from Pathfinder, gone to 5e. drifted away from that even and gone to Dungeon World, which is even simpler. But the sprawl is, it's got a bit of touch of complication to it. But in essence, it's a role-playing game set in the cyberpunk future. You and a group of your players together create the megacorps or organizations that are going to be your nemesis in the game. So if you're going to be, designing your future, you could design a future in which, you know, Amazon runs everything. Or maybe, the military industrial complex becomes some kind of megalithic corporation that, runs a particular area of the country. It could be centered anywhere in the world, which, you know, again, up to your imaginations. And it could be far cyberpunk future, like, you know, in, you know, 2100, 2200, or it could be just near future, like after, technology has kind of hit that nexus point. You can pick up different playbooks. So as you pick up a playbook, that's the kind of character you're going to play, and you'll have different moves and abilities that are in there. So anything from a driver to a fixer, a hacker, a pusher, reporter, soldier, tech, all of these things. And the cool thing I like about the gameplay is that you build, like I said, you build the world around you, you build the corporations, you build your characters, and then you go on missions. And the missions have these mission clocks that count down. And the better you do, the more likely you're set up to succeed in that mission. The worse you do, it has this countdown clock that's going to basically say the worse you do, the more ticks on that clock, the least likely it is you're going to be able to succeed at that mission. So, you know, like, let's say one of the things that ticks off on the clock is that your query knows that you're after them. The next tick on the clock is your query sets up higher security. And then the following one is they know exactly who you are. And then the last one is they're coming after you instead of vice versa. So that's kind of like a very cookie cutter, version of what a mission would look like. So yeah, man, I'm a big fan of dystopian future and cyberpunk. I would have put Apocalypse World on this one, but I think I did that last year. So, I'm going to put a different one here in The Sprawl. And it's written by a guy that I just dig his name, Hamish. I love that name, Hamish. Hamish Cameron does a fantastic job. He posts regularly on Twitter and he responds really quickly to questions about the game. Real personable guy.
Okay, my number three. Now, my number three is brand new to me this year. And if you do the math, you're probably getting a preview of one of the awards, because one of our awards is Best Game Added to the Collection.
And as viewers and listeners might remember, Uncle Jeff hates math.
Yes. I'm just... So, Terraforming Mars.
Oh, it's such a good one.
There, for a while there, when it first came out, you couldn't not hear about Terraforming Mars. Yeah. It was literally everywhere. And even now, they put out, they call it an expansion, but it's basically a different board. That's what it is. It's a different board with different setup of resources. But other than that, it's just a board. And people just they've lost their mind when they announced that this board was happening. And now they're coming out with another expansion called Venus Next. It just adds a bunch of more stuff to this game. If you've never played Terraforming Mars, you are basically playing as corporations that have traveled to Mars to be the one to terraform the planet. Technically, you are all working together because you're all trying to increase the oxygen, the temperature, and the amount of oceans on the planet. Basically, all the stuff you need to sustain life. But really, only one of you is going to get the contract at the end of this. And so you basically are trying to be the company that puts out the most stuff, that earns the most value of terraforming this planet. I will say that I think my favorite moment that happened the last time I played this game, I won by like a couple points, and I did it on the backs of fluffy Martian dogs. Because one of the first cards I played was pets. And it meant that every time a city happened, I put a dog on that card. And so I got it out early, and so I had just piles and piles of these fluffy Martian dogs on this card. And those dogs got me points like crazy. So I just had this image of this horde of little fluffy Martian Pomeranians.
That's what I'm picturing right now.
And they led my corporation to victory. And it's I love this game. It's ridiculous, but it's at the same point, it fills this really sweet spot of being very strategic, but at the same point being very approachable. It's not a complicated game. It's another game where you can sit down and yeah, you might not get all the finer points of the game when you're playing the first time, but I promise you that you will get through this game going, oh, I know how to play now.
See, what I imagine right now is a Mars rover, right? Mike's sitting on top of this rover and it's like a sled team of Pomeranians.
Yes.
He's like, onward to victory.
There's like 75 Pomeranians on Bridle.
Okay. Okay. Listen, regulars, these guys aren't even here right now. It's just you and me, regulars, because this is what's going to happen. I know there are artists out there. I know there are artists in our community.
So good.
And you have a mission.
75 Pomeranians with Mike Perna on the Martian rover.
I have never wanted a piece of fan art more in my life.
Oh gosh.
I have never wanted a piece of fan art more in my entire life.
So good.
But yes, so my number three is Terraforming Mars.
Oh my gosh.
Well, that leaves
you weren't kidding, man. That game was like everywhere. I had to shut off a couple of feeds just because I was sick of seeing it because I wanted it, but I knew I didn't have anybody local to play it with. So I was just like, oh, forget it.
Coming back from Bardstown, that's all I could hear from Matt. Terraforming Mars.
Yeah.
Terraforming Mars. Like, come on, man. Calm down. It's not that. It's just a new game. It's just got the new on it right now. Let the new wear off, and then you get it for half the price.
Oddly enough, it doesn't really have it. At least in board gaming terms, yes, it's only like a year old. But in a world filled with the new hotness, a year old is, you know,
that's an eternity.
Yeah.
To maintain this level of hype a year later is quite an accomplishment.
I give it six more months, and it'll be $39.99 at Amazon.
Dang.
And when that happens, you should buy.
Yeah, I'm playing on it because by then,
talk about apocalypse.
I'll have played all my games, and she will allow me to buy a new one.
There we go. All right, we are back to you, number two on the list.
Well, the number two for me is a classic game. It's on its third release, with new rules and new pitches, new miniatures.
Got it. I know what it is.
What?
Blood Bowl.
Yes! Like, I mean, I love this game. I mean, I've got a dwarf team here that I have yet to paint. And the dwarves look amazing. You know, and nobody could see this stuff here, but, you know, these things look amazing for miniatures.
It's because they're
painted. It's almost like heresy in front of my
camera. I know.
I mean,
I've got teams coming out my ears, but yet. When I get a chance to play this game, it's so much fun. And the last time I really got to sit down and play it was with my buddy Jason. And we had, like, it was so funny because his wife comes from a sports family. And we're sitting there in his basement playing it. And me and him are the most unsportsmanlike people ever. We don't enjoy sports. I enjoy hockey. That's it. And it's she comes home from working a 12-hour shift at the nursing home, and she's like, what are y'all doing? So we're playing football. She just laughed. She laughed, walked upstairs, came back downstairs, and said, I'm proud of you guys. I love it. It's good. It's a game that's been going on for over 20 years. And for most of that time, the Games Workshop did nothing to keep it going. They actually kind of killed it off after second edition. And it kept going through the internet, you know, people. And one of the people that we actually interviewed last year, Tom Andrews at Impact Miniatures, was the one who kept rewriting the rule book because he used to work at Games Workshop. And he's, you know, the video game that's out, they took the rules from the video game, or his rules that he wrote.
And the video game is a lot of fun. I have it.
Yeah, it's great. Actually, we should play it one night, Perna.
We really should.
Yeah. All right. On to Jeff Romos, number two.
So, you know, I totally lied that I didn't want to have, you know, at least one Apocalypse World engine-based game. So I'm going to have two. So speaking of number two, I have this game called No Country for Old Kobolds. It is hilarious. It is, whimsical. And it puts you into the mindset of the poor, beleaguered, spindly armed kobold and their, much maligned society. You know, the villages that, you know, consistently get burned down by first level characters, you know, these adventurers who are cutting their teeth decide that they are going to cut out the teeth of the poor reptilian what they view as a nemesis. I don't think so. I don't agree. And after reading No Country for Old Kobolds, I think you'll agree too that there's a method to their savagery. But in any case, have fun with it. It's basically I almost want to say it's borderline resource management, almost, but it's an RPG and you are playing as a village of kobolds. You have your own particular character, but don't, you know, hold on to that character too long because most likely a first level adventure is going to cut him down. So you assume the identity of a different kobold and a different kobold. And your goal is to basically keep your village alive, help it thrive, help it grow, you know, accomplish goals here and there. Like maybe a mission that you undertake would be to go and appease the swamp god, you know, and give them as many toads as possible so it fills their swamp god gut. And, you know, little things like that. And then also defending your village. So you have like different levels of gameplay. There's the village gameplay and there's like certain moves that the village can do to sustain. There's units. So it's like if you take a group of kobolds out, and then there's finally the individual character that you're dealing with as well. But it is a lot of fun. It's a simple book. I mean, the darn thing is only, what is this, 114 pages long. It's not a very long rules book. It's based on Dungeon World, which is a subset based off of the Apocalypse World engine. But it is a lot of fun. It's a fast play. You could probably get through a session in about 2 to 3 hours. Maybe a little bit more if you wanted to have some fun building up your village, but I mean, you can put something together super fast. It was one of the reasons I was so excited when D&D, kicked out Volos and you can play monster characters and that sort of thing. I was like even more excited because I had got this to the table a couple of times and really enjoyed it. And I was like, oh man, it'd be kind of cool to play a monster in D&D. And then boom, there you go. And thus a kobold monk was born. Anyway, that's a different story. So that's my entry. No Country for Old Kobolds. A lot of fun. A lot of laughs. Don't get too attached to your characters. Just a forewarning. They are squishy. So there you go. That's my number two.
My number two. If you only listen to these when they happen, if you've only listened to last year's and then this year's and kind of skipped the middle bit where my number one happened, you'd probably be confused because my number two is Blood Rage.
I think I just vomited in my mouth.
My number two is Blood Rage. Blood Rage is the game where you are all playing as Viking clans, fighting the epic battle in the midst of Ragnarok as the world is literally exploding around them. It is amazing that, you know, this game, the experience of playing this game is just a ton of fun. Eric Lang is, I swear the man can do no wrong in my eyes. I've lost track of the number of Eric Lang games in my possession. I look forward to getting Rising Sun. Yes. I believe it's coming February.
We'll probably get it before then, by the way, because they're starting to ship this month coming up.
Yeah. So I'm super excited about that. But Blood Rage does a lot of cool things. In a lot of ways, Blood Rage is a Euro game, really, because there's no dice. It's all basically put your dude on the map. You know what his strength is. Combat is one card on each side, so it's not like you're like doing these like elaborate combo moves or anything like that. It's literally just like, I have this number, you have that number, I win, you win, whatever. The combination of the fact that it does have the epic minis, like, I'm not one that kind of overlooks the fact that a lot of this game's appeal is the gorgeousness of these minis. But at the same point, even if they had, like, crappy cardboard stand-ups, I would still really, really like this game just because the theme grabs me, the world grabs me. I like how the game plays. I like the idea that it's a combination of dudes on a map, area control style, as well as card drafting, because every age has a selection of cards and you're literally drafting them with the other players at the table. I like that there's multiple strategies and all of them are viable to get points to win the game. Loki strategy for the win. I love this game so much. You could spend the past year and change hearing about how much I love Blood Rage. And that lets you know how much I love the number one, because this is my number two.
This is shocking.
Wow.
I'm shaken to my core. Well, I mean, I know we're talking about games and stuff, but still, I know how much you love Blood Rage, so I'm really surprised. I'm eager to find out what number one is.
Well,
but that means first we have to get through myself and Daniel Fisher.
Yes.
Yeah.
And so, right now, I'll make it quick. My number one is a game that hits the table more often in my family, not my friends, but my family, than any other game. And it's not Phase 10. It's Machikoro. I got it last year for Christmas through the Secret Santa gift exchange. And my kids have fallen in love with this game, especially my son. And it, you know, usually when it's his game day, he's like, "Can we play Machikoro?" I'm like, "Sure." And so, you know, we get that game out and they're learning strategy and we're, you know, taking each other out. And it's great. I love it. It's a good game. I'm just going to leave it at that. It's a good, clean game that it's good for the family. And I really want to get the expansion because it supports more people. And I've got a baby. It's going to be playing games in about 4 years.
You're going to need an expansion, that's for sure.
That's yeah, cool. I like the fact that it's basically Catan without the board.
Yeah, it pretty much is. And it's awesome because, and like, you can steal from people. My daughter had learned how to do that. She amassed most of the coins just from the fact that she learned how to steal from other people quicker than everybody else did.
As an enthusiastic thumbs up for a particular game and citing a particularly specific rule set that supports theft.
Yeah. It's great.
Hey, I lost track of the number of times when I was a youth pastor, I would say normally we would, you know, deter you from trying to do things like murder, lie, cheat, and steal. But tonight we encourage it.
There's nothing wrong with it.
Yeah. Within the realm of the game.
Yeah, in the game, of course.
Yeah. Of course.
All right, Romo, what's your number one?
All right. Fisher started off with this. I'm going to end with it, but a variation on a theme. Kind of very similar to what I do with, you know, all the Apocalypse World rule sets. But this one is something that's, like, really dear to my heart, especially lately. And that is Adventures in Middle-Earth from Cubicle 7. It is a J.R.R. Tolkien-based, the world, you know, Middle-Earth-based game that's using 5e rules, Dungeons & Dragons 5e rules as the core. But they've expanded it in such a way that it's so subtle. And Cubicle 7 is always so on point with this stuff. You know, if you look at Victoriana, if you look at their Cthulhu products, you look at Lone Wolf, the One Ring set that they have, their own rule set that they put together. There's just so much heart that's in it. There's so much passion that gets put into these games, and you can tell that people who really loved J.R.R. Tolkien and love J.R.R. Tolkien as a body of work really went out of their way to inject that into this book, or into the books that are involved in this. If you read these, you go through and you look at the wording and how phrases are put together, that sort of thing. It's like you're reading out of The Lord of the Rings, you're reading out of The Hobbit. The Silmarillion is right over here in this chapter. The expansion of rules there, it lends itself to the journey aspect. There's actually a journey phase where you decide on a path that you're going to go through in the Wilder Lands or whatever particular region you're in. You roll through some things there. You get a particular result, and that result is going to end up being how you, work your way through that journey. There's a fellowship phase, which is kind of like when you come back home and the things that you do while you're at home, while you're recuperating, you know, the expectation is not that you are supernaturally able to take, you know, vast amounts of damage and just continue to function normally. But you have impacts such as, you know, obviously the physical damage, but also the mental damage. There's this mechanic called corruption that, you know, when you see horrific things, this impacts you. When you see or feel or come in contact with the shadows touch upon Middle Earth, it affects your character. And it actually, there's a mechanic that at first seems a little complicated, but as you roll through it, you get it's organic. It really feels like it's part of that world. So reading through these books and everything, that's what really first inspired me to start doing some long form games in 2018. So that's the lead off hitter right there is Adventures in Middle
Earth. I'm in.
So yeah, man.
I'm in.
I think it's so we're looking to like put together something in January. So sweet. I'll put you on a list. Yeah. So there you go, Adventures in Middle Earth from Cubicle 7. Always as a company, they'll probably show up next recording. As a company, they're always knocking it out of the park. There's just so much passion in what they do, and they put the right people in the right place at the right time. And it's amazing. So, good stuff.
Mike?
My number one, when this game hit Kickstarter, I remember looking at it and going, literally the only reason I have not clicked the little support button is because I didn't have the money at the time.
Das Horse?
No. As the campaign went through, like, I found myself kind of in that place, much like I had when I was post the Blood Rage Kickstarter, because I'm like, man, I want all the pretty extra awesome stuff, but I can't do that now. It took me forever to finally get this game in my hands. And it took me a while to get that game and played and to the point where I actually know what I'm doing. And I'm still learning. I'm still very much learning how to approach this game. But man, do I love walking the fields of battle with my bear because it's Scythe.
Yeah.
Scythe is an amazing game. I love the fact that if you want to go combat, you can go like combat. Like there is ways to get points for fighting people and getting into combat like that. But really, a lot of this game is about avoiding combat. It's about establishing your empire and getting your foothold in the nation. And maybe, yeah, you do push a little bit to get to the center of the board and get that factory. But mostly you are just playing as the representative of the armies of your nation, trying to carve out a little portion and really just establish your foothold in this country, in this land. I love the fact that your main units are mechs, and that the more mechs you have, the more abilities you have. I'm a sucker for an engine building and a civilization building kind of game. That is my jam. And Scythe does
that. You're just excited because it's Diesel Punk.
Oh, it is Diesel Punk, and yes, that does excite me to no end. But the game itself, I love this game. I like the fact that, again, it's another one where you end up having a lot of different ways to get points and a lot of different ways to get the victory at the end of the game. I like the fact that the game is changing because there are certain bonuses that change up at the beginning of the game. I also like the fact that I actually ended up writing about it for our site not that long ago. The idea that you can be doing everything right. You can have your army marching across the battlefield, but if the people hate you, they won't support you. And if they don't support you, you won't end up winning. Your popularity is actually a factor into this. You can't just be a military force. I love all of this stuff. I love the aesthetic. I love the gameplay. Man, do I love Scythe. It is, without even question, my number one.
And yeah, you could be really superficial about it and just say, you know, the Jacob Rosalski art is not too bad to look at.
No, it's one of the few games that I know of that the art spawned the game.
Yeah.
I mean, yeah, he did double back and create a lot of art specifically for the game. Right. But the inspiration for this design was Jamie Stegmaier basically looked at him and went, huh, that looks awesome. It needs a game.
Yeah.
And now what's crazy is that I know they're creating a computer game. Not just the computer version of Scythe, but they're literally building a computer game in this world.
Oh, dig it.
Okay, that's cool.
Oh, man. That's pretty solid.
I have no insider information on that. I have no idea where they are in the development of that, but that has been announced. That's a thing they're
working on. Tell me the truth. You just made that up.
No, he didn't. I could see it in his eyes. Right.
But yeah, no, I love this game. I love this world, and I'm excited to see it grow and be more of a thing. And yes, even though they're doing the computer game, they also are doing a digital implementation of the Scythe board game, which makes me happy.
That's cool.
Well, I mean, that's cool. It's on Tabletopia already, and that's a legit copy in a way because they actually licensed that.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah.
And it's fun to play it, too, on Tabletopia. You can do the single player on that so you don't have to get everything out.
It's real good. Anyway, this is the time of year. Like I said, we're wrapping up the year. This is the first of our first salvo into the end of the year shenanigans. You've been hearing about the games that we love that have been just part of our collection, no matter how long they've been around. Next podcast, you're going to hear all of our stuff from this year, all the stuff that excites us this year, the people, the games, the stuff that has happened in the industry.
You're going to hear a baby crying.
That's what's going to happen.
So the next podcast, you're going to hear all of that stuff. We're super excited. I had posted all the different award types in the tavern. We may end up adding, because there were a couple good suggestions the last time I posted that up. So we might end up doing that. We might add things like, you know, podcast of the year or something like that. But, definitely be listening for the next podcast, especially because, you know, I love y'all and I want to say goodbye to y'all,
for a brief time.
For a brief time. I'll still be around other places. I mean, my kid won't be always at my attention, so there will be times I'll be able to pick up the phone and throw out a Facebook message or two, but yeah. So we're getting ready for the end of the year. Super excited. And always remember, guys, God is the game master. No matter how the dice fall, the game plays on.